very, very end, you know how at the end he whispers, too much time on my hands, too much time. And then it goes, and as he's doing it, he's pointing at where his watch should be. There's no watch.
He doesn't have enough time on his hands anymore.
Kristen, he has no time on his hands.
No time on his hands.
He literally has zero time on his hands.
Mm-hmm. Hello world, it's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who always wondered what would happen if you got caught between the moon and New York City.
I mean, the best that you can do is fall in love, right? We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the year in our music history that marked one particular change that would shift everything for years to come. We're celebrating the songs of 1981 in a special two-part episode diving into both the 24th Annual Grammy Awards and the individual songs that captured each of our pubescent hearts.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Welcome to our latest installment in the series we call On Your FM Dial, celebrating the music we heard coming from our clock radios, car stereos, and for some of us, for the very first time, on cable TV. Normally when we do these episodes on your FM dial or the 70s version called AM Radio Gold, we get really wrapped up in our nostalgia for these songs. And we talk and we talk and we talk and we talk and we talk.
Surprise.
And on these episodes.
Right. What are you talking about?
Just music episodes is when we
right.
talk.
These in particular tend to be unwieldy. And at the end of this freakishly long 2.5 hour recording, one of us has to edit it down to a measly hour or so, cutting out all of our precious observations and feelings.
They are precious.
It is. It's really like, which of those darlings do you cut? It got so out of control that I said to Carolyn and Michelle this time, I am limiting your choices. Normally, we each talk about 3 songs. This time, I said no. You get 2 songs. We just don't have time. And they took to the streets in protest.
Mm-hmm. Picket signs.
Yes. Like I had just taken away all of their freedom to express themselves. So this time we're doing it differently. We usually open these episodes with a rundown of the Grammy Awards for that year, because that's like a fully contained time capsule of the year in music. It's absolutely fascinating. Who was nominated, who won, who presented, who performed. And that's supposed to be just a little teaser to the meat of the episode, which features our individual picks for the songs that impacted us on a personal level. But instead of shortchanging either of those things, we're giving them room to breathe. And part one of our 1981 episode will be our take on the 1981 Grammys. Part two will be all 3 song choices from our personal histories, plus some runners-up and honorable mentions, because it's very hard to stop. And so, welcome to part one of On Your FM Dial 1981 Grammys edition. Do you guys feel better now?
I do. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. I can sleep now knowing that I can share my precious observations and feelings for all 3 songs.
Yes.
I was going to have to cut one because I already had 3 picked when you told me 2.
And yeah, it's impossible to choose.
It is.
Yes, it is.
I mean, actually, 3 songs is hard. 3 songs is impossible.
Well, yeah.
And somehow we make it happen. Mm-hmm. So please know when we give you these 3 songs, if you asked us tomorrow, it would be a different 3 songs. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, last night at about 1 a.m, I changed my songs. So it is what it is. So let us begin. The 24th Annual Grammy Awards were broadcast on February 24th, 1982, honoring and celebrating all the songs that were released in the year prior, and was hosted once again by John Denver. He hosted the Grammys 5 times in the 70s and 80s. And that's because he was pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm. He's so darling. And he's so likable. He's like the everyman. However, yeah, he went on to host in 83 and 84 were 2 of those times. But let's leave him out of We Are the World. Like, if he's,
I know,
he's everybody's darling and everybody loves him enough. But that's still, you guys, I'm sorry, that's still just,
I agree,
chaps my hide.
And they did so in the name of relevancy. They said, you know what? He's just not relevant anymore. Well, if he's so irrelevant, why is he hosting the Grammys in 1984?
Yeah, music's biggest night.
Music, everybody knows his name. Everybody honors him and appreciates him, and they want him there. But,
okay. I know.
We're all salty. We're very, very salty. John Denver has no giant 1970s bow tie this time. And he has no John Denver glasses. Oh. He has some very on-trend, chunky, plastic aviator glasses. Mm.
I don't know why. Is this when he started out, like kind of cutting his hair almost like the mullet kind
of? A little, like it was mullet. A 1970s mullet a little bit. It wasn't going to be like hockey hair, but he was just going to trim it up over the ears a little bit. So it wasn't full on, thank God I'm a country boy. So this Grammy Awards featured some really memorable performances. And for me, the most memorable was Rick James playing Give It to Me, Baby on a broken keyboard. Did you guys happen to catch this?
No.
How did you know it was broken?
Because it was almost like a sketch from The Muppets in which, like, he just struts, and he just starts pounding on the keyboard. Pound, pound, pound. And then the keyboard just, like, falls. It just falls over. And he grabs it with his one hand. And so now he's just pounding on the keyboard with one hand, just one hand. Hold it steady. And then he would let go and it would fall down and he would hold it. He was not going to give up. It looked like you were putting on a play for your parents. It was hilarious.
I have to find that. But he was successful in keeping the tune and everything.
Yes, he sure did.
Well, that says a lot.
And John Denver introduced him like this. He says, and we all know Rick James, right? Can you picture the Rick James hair? Yeah. He's got got bangs. He's got bangs and then long, long braids. So John Denver introduced him like this. First, there was rock. Then there was hard rock. Then there was punk rock. And now, thanks mainly to our next performer, there's punk funk. And he says, you have to watch how you say that on television.
Oh, John Denver. You're adorable.
Have you guys seen the video for Give It to Me, Baby?
No, but just when you said that, you know, a minute ago, in my head, I was like, after I'm done recording, I'm going to go dance to Give It to Me, Baby by myself in my room, because I love that is such a, that makes you want to dance.
It's
song.
A jam. It is a jam. And you need to watch, we're going to put this in the newsletter, the video for Give It to Me, Baby. It is nasty. If you think Prince was overtly sexual, he has nothing on Rick James. Let's just say it involves a Speedo and a hot tub.
Oh, I remember it now that you say that. Yes.
That sounds like last night for me. No, just kidding.
It's comical. It is absolutely comical. And I cannot believe that this was, like, we were just very accepting of this in the 80s. It's funny. And notably, this was the first Grammys after the advent of that most seismic event known as MTV. MTV launched on August 1st, 1981, just a handful of months before this broadcast. But still, even though it's been only a handful of months, you can still see the influence beginning, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Just the showmanship of everything.
I feel like this is when it started to not just be about the song anymore.
Yes.
It was the images created by the song. Like, even if the award wasn't a video award, you can't help but have those images in your mind when you hear the title of that song.
For the first time.
So, yes, I think, to your point, the advent of MTV certainly influenced.
It was just
everything
beginning.
About music and the Grammys, ultimately as well.
And we didn't all have MTV yet. It wasn't available all over the country, which is why we got that tagline, I want my MTV, right? Mm-hmm. They would play the, they would have Sting and U2 and all these people say, I want my MTV. And that was supposed to encourage us teeny boppers to call up our cable provider and say, will you include MTV in my cable package? But still, even though we didn't all have MTV, videos were, because of MTV, videos were being made and then shown on other shows like Casey Kasem's America's Top 10, which was actually a video countdown show, which I was a super fan of, and other places too. It was just starting to be recognized as a thing that performers should be doing now. This was mm-hmm. now part of being a musician, even if they weren't always good at it.
Yeah, right. Just some were naturals and some just were not.
Uh-uh. Yeah, they're like, I don't know how to do this. And we see for the first time a new category at the Grammys called Video of the Year. And no one listening right now will be able to guess the winner because I don't think anybody saw this. I didn't see it. I've never mm-hmm. heard of it except in a historical context. And I don't think anyone saw any of the nominees either, except for one. Because I don't think the Academy or whoever it is, the Grammy people, I don't think they knew exactly what a video was yet or what they were looking
Correct.
For.
Yeah, I think that the criteria for judging Video of the Year was still being formed. And again, like you said, Kristen, based on the nominees and based on the winner, okay? I had to go look this up, everybody. So the winner of the first ever Video of the Year award went to Michael Nesmith of the Monkees. What? It's called Elephant Parts. What? I mean... Did either of you ever see this or know about this?
No.
It's not one of the ones
of it,
I was
never saw it. No,
I was waiting up for. You know, you remember? Right. You remember? You'd go to someone's house who had MTV, and you would just stay up all night because yeah. you're like, "But we haven't seen, you know, the video for this yet," and so you had to wait. I don't know if anybody was waiting up for Elephant Parts. No.
Well, Elephant Parts was pre-MTV. It was really the kindling and the idea that got MTV kind of going. But interestingly enough, Elephant Parts is actually an hour-long program. It's almost like Saturday Night Live. It's like a sketch comedy show. So there are parodies of commercials, of like as seen on TV commercials. And then within that are these what Michael Nesmith called pop clips. So they were songs, not monkey songs. He never did any monkey songs or referred to the monkeys in any of this. And that's where you saw the beginnings of this like storytelling through the song. So there's mm-hmm. like one of the pop clips is kind of at a drive-in, a food drive-in, you know, where there's people mm-hmm. on, women on the roller skates and all of that. And he pulls up in like this convertible and gets out and there's dancing and they're singing. And you see it right there. You're like, yes, this is what we come to recognize as yep. the classic.
A music video.
A music video, correct. Mm. It really put the concept on the map. And so that is indeed what won that first year. It beat out other nominees, including a Laserdisc for Blondie's Eat to the Beat album.
The whole album, not just like one song,
exactly.
But the whole album.
So what we come to think of eventually is like the MTV Awards and those music videos. This was a precursor to all this. So these are more anything musical basically that you could watch, it seems to me. So Elephant Parts was released on VHS. And Betamax. So you had to have a Betamax or a VHS player in order to see this, which again, that was kind of early for that. My family didn't even have cable, let alone a video.
I didn't have either
player.
One of those things.
I didn't either.
Yeah. I just think it's so funny. We've never heard of it. We've never even heard of it. And I'm a Monkees fan.
And it's quite entertaining, I must say. Like it just reminded me of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like there weren't decent videos out there because this prompted me to research a little bit, like, was this all that was available? You know, because the other nominees mm-hmm. were like One Night Stand, a keyboard event. And one of the other nominees was the first national kid disc, like KIDISK, like kid isk, kid disc.
What the hell is that?
I don't know. So I needed to know. I was like, but I mean, I'm thinking of Video Killed the Radio Star. I'm thinking of all those first videos we watched in August, September, October of 1981, why weren't they nominated? And I would like to present for your consideration to the 1981 National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, too much time on my hands. the video for too much time on my hands. I would like to, have you guys seen it?
Too much time on my hands.
You guys, the song, first of all, beats the other ones by a billion. Like some of these other videos that started MTV, where you have half performance mm-hmm. and then half some weird obscure story that doesn't,
like
that
running
so
in an alley.
Bonkers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I was entertained. Where was that? That wasn't even
was
a nominee.
It? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wonder if it's because they didn't know what that was. And because all of these nominees were on Laserdisc, did they think that's what a video was?
Right. I think they were trying to define it themselves. But let's just say some of those musicians are not actors. And they just are so awkward in some of those. You just want to like slide under the, you know, table for them. It's just, you know, yeah. what? Just stick with the music.
I was just going to say, but please watch Too Much Time on My Hands because uh-huh. they are awkward, but yeah. it's deliciously awkward.
It is.
I'm going to put that clip as well mm-hmm. to that video in the Weekly Reader this week because it's just so funny, like the watch salesman and just all the shenanigans going on at the bar in between the performance clips. So.
And the theme is so on the nose, right? Like watches and time.
Yeah, no.
I've got too many watches in my jacket.
But yet at the very, very end, you know how at the end he whispers, too much time on my hands. Too much time. And then it goes, and as he's doing it, he's pointing at where his watch should be. There's no watch.
He doesn't have enough time on his hands anymore.
Kristen, he has no time on his hands.
No time on his hands.
He literally has zero time on his hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worth a watch. And it is sort of like watching people fumbling through the beginnings of learning what a music video is.
I love it, though. Don't mm-hmm. you love it?
Oh, I love it.
And I don't think, you know, when we watched it back then, we didn't think it was awkward. We didn't laugh at it. Then we were, like, mesmerized. Like,
oh,
this
we didn't
is
laugh.
So no. cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And mm-hmm. we have, really, Michael Nesmith to thank for this whole concept, the storytelling of these songs through what he called these pop clips, that TV networks came to him and wanted to buy this concept from him. And he was like, no.
They used his pop clips as the model for
the model.
MTV.
And they gave him yeah. the opportunity to be in it from the ground up, but he wasn't a part of the whole MTV thing. The idea came from his ideas, but he maybe regretted it later, but he did not. He was not like on board.
He was very
MTV.
Anti-establishment. He was not going to work for the man.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly.
But even though we've never seen Michael Nesmith in Elephant Parts, the influence of MTV is felt throughout the entire broadcast, including the winner of both the Song of the Year and the Record of the Year, which went to Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes.
And she knows just what it takes to make a pro blush. She got Greta Garbo, standoff style. She's got Betty Davis Eyes.
First, I just have to say, this is such a deserving pick. And second, when I hear this song, just like Michelle said, I picture the video, especially the part with the synchronized group face slap sequence when they go choo 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 choo.
God. Kristen,
and they're all slapping
not,
each other.
I could not remember that video, so I went back and watched it. And it did bring back a little like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. but this is my point from a minute ago, why wasn't that also nominated for Video of the Year? Because that's a video.
That's a video.
Music video. Uh-huh. And they're in these, if you're not remembering, they're in these Renaissance costumes, all the people that are slapping. And then later, one of my favorite parts, they do this weird like gorilla walk.
Yes.
It's so bizarre. But oh my gosh, when I was watching it, you guys, the lyrics mm-hmm. were coming across.
I have
400
yes.
misheard lyrics from yes. that song. I was like, this was like 2 days ago, me watching it going, that's what she says?
You can't. I've never been able to sing this song. Even at the time, they weren't even Mondegreens because I couldn't even conceive in my brain what she would have been saying.
Just to tease you.
It didn't make sense. Can we just say that? Here's my hot take for the episode. I did not like this song. I did not like Kim Carnes.
Okay.
I know, hot take. And it might be for this exact reason. I like, you know, kind of more of a narrative or storytelling mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. where I can picture it in my head. what is this? And like, of all people, Betty Davis. I mean, is there something about her eyes? I don't know. I didn't like it. I turned it off. I don't even really remember this video at all because I probably got up and left the room. Hot take. I'm telling you,
that's a hot take because mm-hmm. I loved this song and I loved her growly voice. But watching the video, you see like the shadow of like Betty Davis with the cigarette, yes. which is so cool. What? But also, I know people are going to throw things at their speakers. I didn't know until the other day that she says what it takes to make a pro blush.
Pro blush, what it takes to make a blush.
You think that can't be what she's saying. Totally what she's saying. It
How
takes
do you
to make
a hooker
pro blush.
Blush. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then the next line is even worse.
Oh, I see what you're saying now. It's a pro.
It's a like prostitute. A
oh, I yes. didn't know that.
It's
I
was a thinking, pro. Yeah.
I don't know.
How you want to ask me how I know that? Do you want to know how I? This
yeah,
is a really horrible. And I've got so much more to say about the lyrics, but let's just go here first. Okay. How do I know what a pro is? Because my very first sexual harasser was my contemporary American lit teacher. I'm not going to say his name, but you all know him. Everyone from Anoka, you all know him. And he said that I was no better than a pro. And I'm like, haha, what? Yeah. What? And thank God, one of the nice guys sitting next to me, he leaned over and he said to me, he means a prostitute. And he did not say it in a mean way. He said it like he was sorry. And there were people who came up to me after that class, and they both, actually it was mostly boys that said it. I don't remember a girl saying it. Boys who came up to me after class and said, I'm really sorry he said that to you. And that was not the first thing he said to me that was in that category. He was my first sexual harasser. I was 17 years old.
I'm so sorry that happened.
Mm-hmm. Gosh. God, well, I'm today years old learning that pro means prostitute. I've mm-hmm. never heard that
I didn't
phrase.
Know. I
Maybe
had no
it
idea.
Was more what the guys were talking about behind our backs.
Mm-hmm. But Betty Davis has what it takes to make a pro blush. So
yes,
she's got it.
She's ballsy. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that I understood the song maybe in a way that you guys didn't, in terms of what is it about Betty Davis's eyes? How do I know this? Because there was a picture of Betty Davis hanging on the wall in my living room.
Why?
Because my grandpa...
She's my aunt.
My grandpa was in a movie with her. He
what?
Was...
Wait. Stop. Uh-huh. Just everybody stop. We've been doing this podcast for 4 years. This is brand new information.
Well, I'm overstating it a bit. It takes a little bit of backstory. My grandpa was not an
actor.
He was
a musician.
He was a musician.
Right. I remember he's a musician.
Yeah. And he worked for Warner Brothers. He was in a lot of movies. But those musicians are in the background. It's very fleeting, so you can't really see him. But he's on film, right? But the movie where you can see him the best is in the movie Dark Victory. And Betty Davis is sitting at the bar ordering a drink. And my grandpa and a couple of musicians come over to chat her up. And... So there's a still from that scene with my grandpa chatting it up with the musicians and Betty Davis. And Betty Davis is slumped over the bar looking at the camera with these very hooded eyes. I know exactly what she's talking about when she says Betty Davis eyes. I'll show you the picture. Actually, we should put the picture in the Weekly Reader.
Oh, that would be
amazing.
We're
going to do it. Okay. And you can see both my grandpa and the eyes that she's talking about. At the time, I realized I may have been one of the only people to know who she was. A lot of people our age didn't know who Betty Davis was and why there would be this song and what it means. And because of that photo, I knew what this song meant. I knew that she had what it took to make a pro blush. I knew it. But then
she's ferocious.
Yes,
precocious.
Precocious.
Or ferocious? Yeah. Oh, it's both. Oh, good.
Precocious
okay,
is the only line is the only word I could make out. She's precocious.
And let me tell you, this is with 100% of the songs that I don't understand the lyrics. I sang the hell out of that song. And
you
I didn't
did?
Know it.
I couldn't.
Well, no, because you sing it like this. And she knows what it takes to make a blush. A hairbrush. All the boys, they think she's a spy. She's got
Davis eyes. Mm-hmm. Here's the line that I had sort of figured out a lot of it as we went along, but yesterday was the first time I saw the line, she got Greta Garbo's standoff size. She's got Betty Davis size. What in the hell are standoff size?
I thought they were standout thighs.
I thought it was stand up thighs. I always sang it stand up thighs.
I thought she had these incredible thighs that just stood out. She got
I didn't know anything about Greta Garbo's thighs or size. So, and I didn't even
nor that you should have.
Right. How would I even know that? I knew she was referring to Greta Garbo, but the way she sings it in the song, it's like the phrasing is like, she got Greta Garbo's eyes. And so you don't even know it's a name. You don't even know it's a name. Also, okay. We could talk about the lyrics of Betty Davis.
Oh my God, seriously,
all day long.
Listeners, we weren't. This is just a
I'm going to make sure we
organic conversation here. This is not in our notes.
This is not. She got Greta Garbo standoff. Whatever, I can't even sing it. Okay, let's move on. This is not a Betty Davis podcast.
Well, the nominees for Song of the Year and Record of the Year. And you guys, the distinction between them, because I always get confused when I'm watching the Grammys to this day, so I'm just going to remind you, Record of the Year recognizes the recording of a song. So the way you can remember that is that it has the word record in recording, right? I just made that up.
Oh, that's a good one. That's good.
While Song of the Year recognizes the song's composition. So Record of the Year is more like everything it took for the recording of it, probably the vocals as well, right? But I want to give you context from 1981. So Betty Davis Eyes
for Betty
was
Davis
the winner.
Eyes. Yeah.
So Song of the Year, the other nominees, so this is recognizing the song's composition, were Just the Two of Us. I'm going to sing them all too, by the way.
You're welcome. Of course.
Endless Love,
of
Arthur's
course.
Theme. The Best
of
That
course.
You Can Do, and 9 to 5. And then the Record of the Year nominees. So this is the award given to the recording of a song. Betty Davis Eyes winning as again. Just the Two of Us, again. Endless Love, again. Arthur's Theme, again. But sorry, 9 to 5, you got bumped for Just Like Starting Over. I don't know that song. Do
just
I know that
like
song?
Starting Over. Dun, dun, na, na, na. Starting over. Those are so worthy. Like, that really is a good group of songs. There are no stinkers
it's
in there.
It's a great
no,
group
they're
of
not,
songs.
Except for Betty Davis Eyes. I was crushed,
Carolyn Cochran.
I think, with that lineup of songs. And yeah, and then that wins.
It made such an impact on me, the choo-choos. The slap.
Those are the slaps, people.
Slap. Yeah, sorry, I did not make that clear at all. Okay, the winner of the Album of the Year was one of the most important moments of the show, one of the most moving moments of the show, because it went to John Lennon and Yoko Ono for their album Double Fantasy. John Lennon had been killed just a year prior, on December 8th, 1980, which is a moment I don't think the three of us have talked about much on this podcast.
No. Have a distinct memory of it. Might have been when I learned about it, because, you know, we didn't have social media or anything back then.
Right.
So if you didn't really hear it on the news or the radio, it was just going to be word of mouth, like through school or whatever. And I remember I was standing at my locker, and this guy who would go on to become my boyfriend, he had a locker right behind me, and he came over to say, "Can you believe what happened to John Lennon?" And I was like, "Oh, what happened to him? I didn't know." And and that's when he told me that he had been shot. I don't even think I really knew exactly what had happened till years later. But I do remember the first time somebody told me, and I my locker was open. I can visualize the hallway and everything.
Wow.
I know, kind of weird, but yeah.
No, not kind of weird, because it was a moment, right? Mm-hmm. It was a cultural moment. It was like the 60s had just been killed. And I heard it on the radio getting ready for school, and I immediately ran into my mom's bedroom, because in my mind, my parents were children of the 60s. Now, my parents think they're children of the 50s, so they will tell you that the Beatles were not for them. They were too old for the Beatles. I argue with that. But nonetheless, I ran to my mom thinking that I was going to deliver some very pivotal news to her, and she was a little cavalier. And that was really bothersome to me. And I carried this heavy, heavy weight with me all day. Luckily, when I came to school, everybody was feeling the same way that I was. So I wasn't alone in the school day. I was only alone in my house.
I watched the clip where Yoko Ono accepts the award, and it was so heartbreaking because she's so overcome by the crowd's reaction.
Yeah.
And then little Sean comes up on stage.
Oh my gosh,
and
7 years
little
old.
Little page boy, yes, like right. haircut, barely see over the podium, and the crowd will not stop applauding. They're standing, they're applauding. She has her hand up to her chest because she's so overcome, and she almost can't speak. She finally has to just start speaking over the noise to get them to quiet down. And you should just watch it. It's so beautiful what she says. And she leans down to see if Sean wants to say anything. He says no.
He says no. Once she was able to speak, she said, "I think John is here with us today. Both John and I were always very proud and happy that we were part of the human race. He made good music for the earth and for the universe."
Yeah.
Yeah. With her little child holding his little hand.
I think that moment when she accepts the award is kind of the defining moment for me of that particular Grammy Awards night.
Wow.
Like, I couldn't tell you anything else that happened that night, except probably I was really mad about Betty Davis eyes. But in terms of a visual that sticks in my mind, it's that.
Like, this album was such a testament of love between this man and this woman and their child. All of that came through on the songs and on the album cover art. Even it felt good. I had the 45 for Woman, which is also on that album, which was a birthday gift from the Stein Girls. And the picture of the two of them kissing on the little paper sleeve of the 45, it made me feel good about the world. Like, that's what I want. It wasn't sexual. It was love, pure and simple.
Yeah. And speaking of that song in particular, I really feel something when that song is playing. And I'll get into that, I think, a little bit more in our next episode about why some of these songs affected me, not necessarily because I liked them and I was going to run out and buy the 45, but because they were like a soundtrack to what I was experiencing at this point in my life. And so whenever I hear the beginning of that song, it's almost like a gut punch. In a way, it's like a real melancholy feeling that I get. So
it's a twisty feeling in your tummy.
Yeah.
In your tummy.
Really, all of those John Lennon songs that came off that album make me feel that way.
For sure.
This album included the hits, like we just said, Woman, Just Like Starting Over, Watching the Wheels, and the tearjerker, Beautiful Boy. And that this album was a real comeback for him after he took years off, basically, to be a stay-at-home dad. And as I'm reading through all this, I'm just thinking, my God, what would John Lennon think of the state of our country right now?
Oh, so many people that are gone. What would they think of the state of our country, right? These people that just wanted to heal it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He just wanted to heal the world. He just wanted to put love and joy out there.
Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run, and your daddy's here. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy.
Okay, let's bring this up.
Well, the nominees for Album of the Year are not ones you would probably find in the collection of a junior high kid. Certainly, I didn't have any of these.
No.
I'm going to read them to you guys. Tell me if you remember these albums or if you actually know any songs from them. So besides Double Fantasy, which Kristen just said won that award, we have The Dude, Quincy Jones. Anyone?
Do we know any of the songs? I feel like I should, but I don't know. I don't know. This is Kristen calling from the future, and I am so embarrassed. When we recorded this last week, it really bothered me that I had zero recollection of this Quincy Jones album. And so when we finished, I did a little research, and I got Husker Dude so
hard. It is the very definition of Husker Dude, because this was something that was erased from my brain for 44 years and then resurrected from the dead in a wave of familiarity. Not just familiarity, but like extreme joy. I loved the song I Know Karita from this album, The Dude, with all of my heart. I didn't own it and they didn't play it on the radio, so I had to wait for it to randomly appear in my life, which is just another form of elevating the savoring of the song, right? We all know this. I sent the song to Carolyn and Michelle with our standard alert, Husker Du, Husker Du. And Carolyn replies, OMG, Husker Dude. Because apparently she had a friend named Joe Karita, and they would serenade this kid with the chorus of I Know Karita. Here's the very embarrassing reason for our collective amnesia. I Know Karita is spelled A-I-N-O-C-O-R-R-I-D-A. But when we heard it, we thought it was about someone named Karita, and they knew them. They knew Karita. We didn't recognize A-I-N-O Karita on the album The Dude. I really wanted to know Karita. I thought she sounded like a really cool kid. I Know Karita is actually Spanish for, according to various sources, for bullfight of love, or possibly don't run away, or if you put it into Google Translate, it's Portuguese for, oh no, cum shot. Not even kidding. And so, all apologies to Quincy Jones for that brain fart. Please enjoy this moment of the Husker Duiest song in the history of PCPS, I Know Karita. Back to our regularly scheduled program.
Well, Mistaken Identity, Kim Carnes. Carolyn, yeah. You know any songs from that? Okay, we have Gaucho from Steely Dan. I bet I would if I looked it up. I just didn't.
I think so.
I think Hey 19 was maybe on that one. Hey 19,
I love that song. That's a good one. Steely Dan always has some good songs.
No, I mean, and if I did, it would have just been the 45. I wouldn't have ever had that. Like, I wouldn't know it came from Gaucho. Yeah.
And then Breaking Away, Al Jarreau.
I feel like I should know something. Hello, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Armoire, the clothing rental and return company that Carolyn and Michelle and I have been using for just a little over 6 months now. Armoire makes getting dressed easy and a lot more fun. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build a more exciting wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz, select items you like, and the clothes show up at your door in just 2 days. Then, when you're ready for something different, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. In the past, I've fallen victim to the fast fashion addiction. It truly is an addiction, grabbing that cute t-shirt off the rack as I walk by with my cart, because it's only $10. But we all know what happens. That $10 t-shirt goes in the giveaway pile 6 months later because it now looks like a dish rag. Armoire allows me to indulge in higher quality materials that look so much better, and they feel better too. Armoire also allows me to take some risks and maybe try out a style I wouldn't normally commit to, because I don't have to commit to it. I borrow it, try it out, see how I feel, and send it back. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again.
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn, and I wanted to check in, It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore because now there's Hormone Harmony, and you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
From We Are the World, yeah.
Wasted at We Are the World. He was wine drunk.
He was so wine drunk, and yeah. Lionel Richie's like, he just kept bringing in bottles of wine, and I kept taking them out, basically. It's like, and he's not looking.
Once you know that from that documentary, you can't unsee it.
No, you can't unknow it. You can't unknow it.
Ugh. The next category is one of my favorites. Best New Artist is always one of my favorite categories, looking at it in retrospect, because you can see who was new, who would go on to be a big name, and who would fade away. Who was the person that we thought would be a big star, and then they didn't? Or who at one time wasn't well known, and you're like, oh my God, there was a time when that person was a new artist. And the newcomer who won this distinction in 1981 was Sheena Easton. My baby takes the morning train. He works from 9 to 5.
Yeah, I think that's. I don't. Who are the other? Who are the nominees? Who was she up against?
Well, there were some good ones, but the most notable, I think, the one that gave her the run for her money, and maybe should have been.
Yeah,
this is all me just talking shit. Yeah. The Go-Go's.
Yeah, so I was thinking of that, and I didn't look at the nominees because my thought was, wait, where are the Go-Go's? Like, this
where
is criminal.
Uh-huh.
Because Beauty and the Beat was out, and that is a landmark album, mm-hmm. right? Plus, they're the first female rock group to write all their own songs and play all their own instruments. I mean, it took the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame all the way until last year to recognize that.
Yeah, that's pretty egregious.
And maybe in 1981 just didn't know what hit them with the Go-Go's yet.
I don't think they were really on our radar quite yet, because if you look at the top songs of 1981, there's not one Go-Go song listed in the Billboard 100. So I don't know what year or what time of the year that came out. So if it was late 80s,
it was June. It was summer. It was
summer,
like June. It was like June or September or something.
Yeah, because that is crazy.
We Got the Beat and Our Lips Are Sealed mm-hmm. are the two hit singles from the album Beauty and the Beat that was released in 1981.
Wow.
But maybe they just weren't really tracking a lot yet until early 82.
Did the traction not begin until 82?
At the end of 81. We knew the album. We had the album.
It was definitely a seventh grade band. It was not a 1982 band. It was my seventh grade year. And I wonder if maybe the Go-Go's just didn't represent to them longevity or quality, or like, did they just think they were a bunch of party girls? Whereas to us, they were earworms. They were all over the radio. Like you said, they were the first female band to play all of their own instruments and get any attention whatsoever. They got radio play like crazy. But did the big muckety mucks not see it? Because this is the only place in 1981 where the Go-Go's appeared. There are no songs, no albums, Best New Artist, that's it.
Let our love wherever we go.
nominated the following year? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. That's a really good question.
To see that because I just want to tell everyone I forgot how much I loved Sheena Easton. Okay,
I know.
Oh my gosh, yeah. You guys! I started a new playlist called Forgotten Favorites 1981.
That's a great topic.
I love it. Her songs are them For Your Eyes Only. Oh my gosh, that's another one.
For Your Eyes Only.
Yes.
I still have my 45 of For Your Eyes Only in my closet behind me right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that song and Modern Girl.
Yes.
Sheena Easton was everything to me kind of then. I'm sure that was one category and one winner that I was clapping for because I loved her.
She was
different. Had an attitude.
And she did.
Was, yeah, the you know, Morning Train and Modern Girl.
She don't build her world around no single. She's getting by doing what she can. She is free to be what she wants to be. All she wants to be is a modern girl. Na, na, na,
along those lines of kind of females starting to stand up for themselves, I feel like some of her songs, like Modern Girl and even 9 to 5, The Morning Train, were like, I'm somebody too. Like, I'm not just going to be sitting around taking care of my husband or, you know, kind of stepping into their own and their agency. Mm-hmm. So I did appreciate that about
her. She was like a feisty pixie.
She was. I loved her.
She was. And she's kind of Go-Go's like with her music. My favorite Sheena Easton song though is from About Last Night. Is I'm so far, so good.
We've been over.
Oh, I love that song.
Like we should.
Oh, I had that soundtrack.
Yeah, I have that at 45 as well, but the whole soundtrack to that movie is good.
There are songs that descend, and I'm going to say this in past tense, descended upon your radio that had such a singular sound to them that they just made you sit up and listen. And Morning Train was one of those. You're like, what is this?
Totally.
Mm-hmm. What is this song? And then she was Scottish.
Yes.
On top of it
that's
all.
That's right.
And even like For Your Eyes Only, there was this kind of, at least for me, I knew it was a James Bond thing, but it was almost like she was singing in space or something. It's hard for me to describe, but there was like, I can't sing. But the way it entered my ears just sounded kind of otherworldly or something. It's hard for me to describe, but I loved that song too.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful song. Yeah.
That music today is hard for me. And I've always been into contemporary music. It's not like I only listen to music from the 70s and the 80s, but it's been until recently, like the last 5 years or so, I'm sort of dropping off a little bit. And I think it's because we cut our teeth on songs that were cutting new ground. I don't know what the idiom is. Anyway, everything that came into our world when we were in junior high was new and different, a new genre. It was unique and singular. And everything now kind of has a genre feel about it, right? Mm. Like the songs kind of blend into each other a little bit. They're not really singular. And so it's just harder for me to pay attention.
I will admit, I do not listen to new music. Like I don't listen to radio. I listen to playlists I've curated and that's about it. And sometimes I'll listen to, you know, stuff that my kids are mentioning or I'm riding in the car with them. And if they're listening to anything other than Taylor Swift, I will be like, oh, who's that? Who's that? Or one of them will say, Mom, you would love this band. It sounds really poppy or it sounds like, and they'll send it to me. And I feel so super cool that I'm like, I know who they are.
I get exposed on Saturday Night Live. You'll kind of hear some of those. Yeah. I'll be like, who is that musical guest? And Grace will go, come on, Mom, you know. And so Gracie Abrams was on this past week. And I'm sorry, talk about genre and the way people sound. What is that sound?
Like, I agree.
I can't imitate it. You probably can do it much better than I can. But it's all this kind of singing from their nose and their weird part of their throat, and they're all just...
It sounds pretty affected.
And there's very little melody.
Yes.
There's very little melody.
Like the other night, watching Saturday Night Live, I thought, isn't this out of tune, Grace? Does she need to be lip syncing? This is horrible. And Grace was like, no, this is great.
It's so funny that you say that, because I do a lot by Saturday Night Live too. And I see how long it takes me to either decide that I'm going to pay attention to this person or I'm going to go do something. And mm-hmm. I had high hopes for Gracie What's-Her-Nuts. And I found myself scrolling my phone.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to share with you guys the winners of both the best pop vocal performances, male and female. And again, I'm curious if you remember any of these, because again, I don't. Only way I know this first artist is because my parents, I think they had some like albums from her from the 60s or whatever. This would be Lena Horne, and she won for The Lady and Her Music Live on Broadway. I
congratulations,
don't know.
Congratulations, Lena. Yeah, I don't.
So glad you got recognition.
Very glad. She's probably very deserving. It just wasn't in our world.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Al Jarreau, you guys, I'm so glad he won too, but it was for Breaking Away, and we just mentioned that album earlier. I went on and listened to Breaking Away to see, like, oh, I'm sure I know it. I just don't know the title. I don't know that this is the name of it. Never heard it.
No.
You didn't know any of them? I was really counting on that, too. Like, oh, I know this. I bet I just don't know the title.
No.
There was nothing on that album you knew.
Well, I didn't know Breaking Away for sure for that vocal performance. So
interesting.
That was a very interesting thing to me about the whole 1981 Grammys, where there were just things that, where did it come from? Like, didn't come from my radio. And
it's really weird. I agree. Yeah,
I mean, Olivia Newton-John, why aren't we giving that to her?
Where else? How come this is the only place we see Physical? I started to do the math. Like, when was it released? Was it really a 1980 song? Was it really? Because remember on Solid Gold, in our Solid Gold episode, when the Solid Gold dancers said they hated Physical because it was number one every single week and they had to do new choreography for it 10 times in a row?
Yeah.
And yet there's no Olivia Newton-John in this Grammy thing except for Right Here, a non-winning nominee for.
And how does Physical lose to Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music Live on Broadway?
I mean, I haven't heard it, so who knows?
Well,
but I don't need to hear it.
It might be.
It's not for live Broadway music. The award is for best pop vocal performance.
Okay,
how is live
point.
On Broadway
good
pop
point.
Vocal?
Shouldn't that be like in the show tunes category or something?
I just know that if I was one of the other three nominees who were all. And maybe it's just our age. We all love these other three
That's
nominees
right.
and their songs.
Yeah.
But like, I would be furious. I'd be like, that's not fair. You know what? I'd take my ball and I'd go home.
Yeah. I think, again, it was probably, she's much older now too in the 80s. Her star was shining in the 60s. So this is maybe one of those, oh, she's deserved it for a long time. Like everybody might have been really happy the fact that
she's the Susan Lucci of best pop vocal.
Yeah, maybe this was like a lifetime achievement award for her. That could be.
Maybe.
I mean, but let's look at, here's a name too in the list of nominees for this award that I just want to like celebrate for a moment. Juice Newton.
Just call me angel of the morning, angel. Just touch my cheek before you leave me, baby. Just call me angel of the morning, angel. Then slowly turn away.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because other than her hit song, I'm remembering lots of hair, right?
Oh, yes.
Long 70s
bangs.
Hair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got her mixed up with Kim Carnes, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, well, I don't, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't like Kim Carnes, so, and then Juice, I just.
Did you not like Juice Newton?
I mean, it was okay.
What's the other song besides Angel of the Morning?
Living
What's
with
the
Queen
one?
Of Hearts.
Yeah.
No,
yes,
really
I love
smart
that
Mars.
Song.
That's a little too.
That is a bop. Carolyn, you don't like that song?
Well, I do like that song. And there were a lot of bops.
Oh, my God. I'm putting that song on a playlist. ASAP.
Yeah, I might
add that. This was for Angel of the Morning, which is right. also a fantastic song. That's not, yeah, but she made a really big splash, and Juice Newton, that name was so unforgettable, and her hair was so unforgettable. This was an image and a sound that we couldn't get out of our heads, and I'm just really surprised that this is the only place. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess we do see her one other place.
What's she doing these days? Anyone know?
I know. I looked this up a long time
ago. She's 72 years old.
I just
popped it up.
Okay.
72 years old. Oh, yeah. God, she was absolutely beautiful. She aged well, too. We have Angel of the Morning, Queen of Hearts, also from 1981, The Sweetest Thing.
The other nominees in this category were Kim Carnes again, John Lennon again, Christopher Cross for Arthur's theme, When You Get Caught Between the Moon and New York City, and Just the Two of Us by Bill Withers and Grover Washington Jr. Those are pop songs.
They're great and great.
not great songs, show tunes, yeah. Or right. I'm thinking that maybe Al Jarreau might be jazz. Maybe that could go in the jazz category. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Maybe. Well, mm-hmm. More interesting was the best pop vocal performance by a duo or group with a total earworm that came out of left field and stole all of our hearts. Ooh-wah, 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 ooh-wah. Great bop that was.
Oh.
And I will have a hot take. It wasn't like something that was my favorite. And the only reason it's because my mom and her best friend, Mary, who I think I've probably mentioned before, but they were stewardesses together. Anytime my mom and Mary would get together, there was lots of Bloody Marys involved, lots of gin and tonics involved. And when they would get a little tipsy, they would do this little silly dance and ooh-wah, ooh-wah, ooh, cool kitty, tell us about the boyfriend. And then my sister and I would be like, leave us alone, just stop it, you guys. But then that would even instigate them more to be like, come on, and they'd like start dancing and snapping their fingers. And so that's why that song, I'm just like, ugh.
It makes you cringe. It's embarrassing.
Reminds me of Drunk Mom
song.
And Mary. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Drunk Mom song. My brother got this as a 45 for a birthday present. And this is another good example of a song that was just so different.
Yeah.
And so it makes you perk up and listen.
It really does. I mean, I'm thinking as we're just discussing these songs, there were a lot of fun bops. Like, this is another good bop.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't help but be a little happier and peppier. And I think that's why some of these struck a chord in me, because there were a lot of times in 1981 that I needed to be picked up a little bit and felt a little peppy. So, mm-hmm.
And this song had that throwback too. I mean,
totally.
Obviously the Manhattan Transfer had that sound, but that it won in 1981 along with this great group of nominees, I think says a lot about it. So the other groups in this category, the Pointer Sisters with Slow Hand, mm-hmm. Hall & Oates with Private Eyes. Come on!
Private Eyes.
We're watching you. They see your every you guys, this year and 82, such good years for Hall & Oates songs.
Yeah.
Gaucho, the album by Steely Dan. And I call foul on this one because, as you guys are going to hear in next week, I love, love, love the song, but Endless Love.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
My first love, you're every breath that I take, you're every step I make.
I feel like it's not a pop song, but I get why it's in there, because it's in that.
Well, they don't have
maybe
a ballad
pop radio
category. So
I guess not.
That's why it falls into pop radio. It's pop radio, but it's a ballad, but it's pop radio.
But I guess I keep seeing it losing in the 1981 Grammys.
I
and
know.
So I'm like, find a category for this classic, beautiful love song of all time.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that I went to see Hall & Oates in a stadium concert. So, you know, 50,000 people or something like that, with my friends Kristen and Tony. And Kristen and Tony are famous for wanting to leave a concert before the encore so they can get out of the parking ramp.
You know what? Don't even go to a concert.
I know. And it's just the three of us,
there.
Right? And I was like, I'm not going. I'm not leaving I haven't heard Private Eyes yet, right. So I'm not leaving the Hall & Oates concert because I know it's going to be the encore. So sayonara. And then I'm sitting there by myself, and can I just tell you what kind of joy it is to watch 50,000 people go.
It's so
Private
great.
Private Eyes. 50,000 people all at the same time. It just is the most joyous thing ever. Pop instrumental performance is worth a mention because it's something we've talked about before. The winner in 1981 was Mike Post for the theme for Hill Street Blues. This guy is the king of the TV theme song, and he's winning awards for it. And this is notable also because his songs were on the radio. These TV theme songs that he composed were on the radio. Hill Street Blues was a hit song that I heard on WLOL getting ready for school in the morning.
Congratulations to Mike Post. I wonder if he won other Grammys, but so deserving. We've talked about Mike Post several times and just what an impact he had on us that he might not get recognition for.
Right.
Because to this day, so many of the theme songs that he's responsible for, they've been little brainworms, earworms right. for decades for all of us. Mm-hmm. Like I said in one episode, I hope he's one of the ones that has one of the giant homes in Vail or Breckenridge that I see when I go skiing, and I'm always like, what does that guy do?
Right?
That's his second home. What does that guy do? I hope it's Mike Post.
I hope it is too. He deserves it. And there's only one nominee from that category that I want to talk about, and that is such a 1981 thing. Hooked on Classics.
I loved it. I loved it.
I mean, talk about a blast from the past, right? Hooked, if you guys don't remember, Hooked on Classics was a medley from a K-Tel album of the same name called Hooked on Classics. It was released in July of 1981. It went all the way to number 10, the song did, on the Billboard charts. It spawned a whole series of K-Tel albums called Hooked on Bach, Hooked on Tchaikovsky, Hooked on Mendelssohn, Hooked on Mozart. And the single, the radio hit, Hooked on Classics, was a medley of familiar classical pieces very unceremoniously played over a disco beat, which was so offensive to my dad, I can't even tell you.
I bet.
And it included,
I loved it.
Oh, of
Me
course
too.
I did.
I felt kind of like,
hoity-toity.
Yeah, smart in a different way. Yeah,
it absolutely introduced classical music to the masses, right? I dare say it was some people's only exposure to classical music. It included snippets of Flight of the Bumblebee, Rhapsody in Blue, Eine kleine Nachtmusik, The Marriage of Figaro, Carmen, the William Tell Overture, and the Hallelujah Chorus from The Messiah.
Naturally.
And it was such a moment that this is something that the public was waiting for, was eating up, and it is just sort of indicative of 1981. If you put that out today, a pop medley of classical songs, what would people do? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't either, but I do hope that everybody listening goes and searches it on, if you listen on Spotify, yep. Apple Music, whatever, yep. Because I know I'm going to right after this and add it to some sort of like, yep. Add it to my workout playlist, where I just pick up weights and I just dance.
Yeah.
No, seriously, that's my workout. But I'm going to do that to Hooked on Classics, but that with that disco beat. I was thinking of Flight of the Bumblebee. Yeah. Well, the winner of Best Rock Vocal Performance would go on to be a classic, and that is Jessie's Girl by Rick Springfield.
Oh, my God.
Jessie's Girl that still gets so much airtime, that he's still performing at age 75. And I would argue it's one of a handful of 80 songs that our kids know well, yep. like yep. know the words too.
Yep.
All of our kids, and I'm sure listeners, all of your kids, because they all grew up listening to our 80s songs. They know them. But Jessie's Girl, if they had to pick like 10,
yeah.
Jessie's Girl would be one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I have a bone to pick with the Academy. I never thought of it as a rock song.
I
to
know.
Me, this would
no, this pop, pop, right? Pop,
mm-hmm.
it
I
would
agree.
Be popular. I mean, he's Dr. Noah Drake on a soap opera. People, that is not Bruce Springsteen singing "The River" or anything.
Yeah.
That's a rocker for you. So, this always kind of irritated me. I know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Rick Springfield is thrilled that he was in this category, but I wonder what makes something to be considered rock versus pop.
Maybe the guitars or something. I don't know.
I do think like he's out front with an electric guitar. Does that make it rock? I don't know. I'm just making this up.
But he plays a doctor on a soap opera yeah. by day. I'm sorry. You cannot be a rock star and a soap opera star. I'm sorry.
I agree with you.
I'm sorry. John Stamos?
No, I'm just kidding. Blackie? I think Jessie's Girl, the longevity of Jessie's Girl could rival any song from any era, possibly. We hear it more today, maybe even than we did in 1981. Like you said, our children know it. Good for you, Rick Springfield, for taking that one all the way to the bank, for composing something that was so completely memorable. But I just want to point out, we don't know what Jessie's Girl's name is.
No.
You're right.
We don't.
She doesn't have a name. Mm-mm. We always think she's Jessie, but she's not. It's Jessie's Girl.
Jessie is a friend. I wonder, too, if that song would have been as popular had he not been on General Hospital.
Oh.
You know, I feel like that was a huge attraction to that song, at least mm-hmm. for me. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I loved him on General Hospital, and he was so cute. And then, oh, my gosh, he has a song. That song is going to be great. And so that's what attracted me to the song, not necessarily being independent as just a really right. good
oh, song. I can answer that for you because okay, in 1981, good. I was only 11, turning 12 in 1981. And I didn't watch General Hospital then. And I loved okay. that song.
Did your sister?
And I didn't watch it either.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it next week.
And I love it.
I love that song. Yeah.
But, you know, like we've talked about before, just because we didn't watch something doesn't mean that we didn't know about it. Unlike today where we're all siloed and everything is streaming and we can't find something unless it's given to us by the algorithm. Mm-hmm. I certainly knew he was Dr. Noah Drake.
He was in Tiger Beat.
Yeah, he was in Tiger Beat. And come on, he was adorable. Sometimes I think, too, maybe they MacGyver the categories because they want to honor certain people. And maybe they wanted to honor Al Jarreau, but they couldn't honor Al Jarreau and Rick Springfield. So let's put Rick Springfield in rock.
This is true.
Right?
Kind of totally. Like how The Bear, mm-hmm. that TV show, is in comedy for like
yeah,
Emmy
that's
Awards.
No, yeah, that's not a comedy. That's not.
No.
I didn't laugh once.
No. Mm-mm.
Didn't laugh once. I do want to point out just one song that was a surprise nominee in the Best R&B Vocal Performance category, and that is She's a Bad Mamma Jamma, by which parentheses, she's built, comma, she's stacked, parentheses, by Carl Carlton. I swear to God, I did not know about the parenthetical part. I did not know that she was built and she was stacked. I loved this song. I sang this song. I clearly had no idea what I was singing. It is an adorable song. I was under the impression, for some reason, I thought Carl Carlton was Michael Evans on Good Times. And so I don't know why. And so I just pictured Michael from Good Times singing, "She's a bad mamma jamma." And what is a mamma jamma? Can somebody please tell me?
Well, if she's built and she's stacked, she's a hot chick.
Yeah. Is there a tomato basically. Somewhere in the – I for some reason, I thought there was – she was a tomato. I thought the Mamma Jamma was a tomato.
Looking it up, fact-checking. Okay. I'm just going to put Mamma Jamma in Google, and let's all pray after I hit return.
But it's not porn.
It doesn't – yeah. Well, that song comes up.
Okay.
And he comes up, and – what is the slang Mamma Jamma comes up, and it says, a woman who is built and stacked, has curves in all the right places, has perfect body measurements in every dimension, a perfect figure,
in every
extremely
yes.
beautiful, sassy, classy, foxy, and heavenly. Basically, a perfect woman.
She's a bad Mamma Jamma, just as fine as she can be. Her body measurements are perfect in every dimension. She's got a figure.
that's shown of getting attention. She's poetry in motion, a beautiful sight to see. I get so excited viewing her anatomy.
I was noticing that there are a lot of songs with parenthetical title, like with a title
and
then a parenthetical part of the title. I mean, look, we've got Lady, You Bring Me Up. We've got the Mamma Jamma. We've got Morning Train is actually called 9 to 5.
Yes.
But I guess, like, you know, that was going to compete.
Well, and when did Separate Ways come out? Because that is right around 1981. And as my son will tell you when he's 8 years old, it's called Separate Ways, Worlds Apart. It was Separate Ways, parentheses, Worlds Apart, parentheses. And that's the way he always said it, Separate Ways, Worlds Apart. Also, in the Best R&B Performance by a Duo or Group had some of my favorites, including Let's Groove by Earth, Wind & Fire. And you just mentioned it, Carolyn, what I think is the feel-good song of 1981, Lady, parentheses, You Bring Me Up, parentheses, by the Commodores. This on vinyl. It is a mood changer. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't know when I bought this album, and I bought it used recently at my local record store, is that, and this is always such a fun surprise, it came with a poster. There was a poster inside the record.
Oh.
And it is spectacular. It is full of like tight gabardine slacks and photo gray lenses and these perfectly coiffed afros. And I had this wild hair to frame it and put it on the wall. It's huge. It's like 3 feet by 2 feet. Well, guess what my husband said? He didn't want the Commodores on our wall in the living room.
I know.
We do not have the same taste in art.
I actually think that would be so cool and such a conversation starter to like walk into someone's house and you go, wait, are those the Commodores? And if I walked into someone's house and they're like, why, yes, those are the Commodores, I would be like, can we be best? Like,
let's be friends.
Even though I wasn't like totally into it, just somebody that would do that. That's
it's
why
cheeky.
I'm friends with Kristen.
Yeah, it's cheeky.
Kristen would be, and she's got the perfect places for it.
They're so cool. And they're,
it's so cool.
So coming up next, we've got the winner of the Best Country Vocal Performance, female, and the winner of the Best Country Song. They happen to be the same. This would be the iconic 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping with folks like me.
Oh, I want to stand up and clap.
I know,
want to stand
don't
up.
We?
I mean, right?
I know. Mm-hmm.
That's one of my, next week you'll hear this. It's one of my runners up. But because it was so, even as a 10, 11 year old, what a fun song
again,
to sing.
It's so fun. And it's kind of cool in that it's one of these crossovers. I mean, it wins in the country category, but we hear it a lot on, we know it because it was on the pop radio stations. One of the fun facts I learned about this song, I watched an interview with Dolly Parton, and if you remember, there's a part of the song that sounds like there's typewriter typing. She has long acrylic nails, and it's just her like going back and forth across her acrylic nails.
Yeah.
She
made that sound effect?
She made that sound effect because she said when she was coming up with ideas for the song was when they were actually filming the movie. So she would be on set and she'd get an idea for one, for a line or a part. And she didn't have any instruments, obviously. So she would try to look around to see what she had to like create some kind of other sound. And so that's when she kind of discovered the fingernail bit. And then she was able to incorporate that into the song. And I thought that was really fun.
I love it. I love it.
And I loved it. And I think one reason I loved that song so much is because I had seen the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just thought it was, you know, again, I'm like 11 years old, so I'm a little bit shocked. And there were some, you know, some themes in there that were a little bit, you know, maybe over my head. But I loved the movie so much. And then that just made me love the song even more.
And let's not forget this song, like it became the theme song for women's rights in the workplace.
Right.
Quite literally, it becomes the theme song.
this was the beginning of that kind of movement in the 80s that we were a part of. I mean, we mentioned some of these Sheena Easton songs where it was like, I'm not just here to cook your dinner while you go out, or breakfast while you go off on the morning train. You know, I'm a person. So I love that. And I think that stuck with us for that mm-hmm. reason as well. Mm-hmm. We got to talk, you guys, about the best country performance by a duo or group. Oh my gosh, another one. I've got to say, we all knew. And it is not because we were tuned in to the country station, because I didn't even recognize one other nominee
I didn't either.
In this category. But you bet your patootie, I knew. Elvira.
Elvira. Elvira.
Loved it. My friend Lisa and I would sing that all the time. In fact, she still does. So it was only like within the past year, she like reposted on Facebook or something like the song. And at the time, Oak Ridge Boys were performing at the Medina Ballroom, which was right by my old house. And I was like, I kind of want to go just to hear them sing Elvira.
Just for the one song. That's all
just
I need.
Just to do the
giddy up. $30. I love how this little intro by way of the Grammys has become a true historical deep dive. There's so much to be learned about a singular year by looking to the Grammys. You get kind of a wide angle view of a moment in time, what's happening literally at that very moment. You get music styles of the moment. You get iconic songs. Who was considered a new artist? Who was considered at the top of their game? A who's who of entertainment, fashion, hairstyles, and what kinds of glasses people are wearing, which is really, that's very interesting to me to watch glasses fashion change. And most importantly, it's great backstory for the music we'll be bringing you next week. The songs from our own lives that stuck to us like glue in 1981. Will they be among these Grammy winners? Who knows? This was not all the music that was on the radio, right? So we'll see what our personal lives will dig up for you. Thank you so much for listening today, and we will see you next time.
And as always, we'd like to give a special thank you to our Patreon members who take their support of our podcast and all the things we do. It's a multitude of things, really, to the next level with their monthly donations. And today we're giving a special shout out to patrons Lynn, Valerie, Patty, Stephanie, Rochelle, Mindy, Susan, Joanna, Carolyn, and Jennifer. And if you'd like to take your support to the next level, but a monthly donation isn't for you, good news, you can. Just check out our website, poppreservationists.com, where you can donate one time. The cost of just one cup of coffee can truly help us pay the bills that it takes to keep this whole thing trucking.
And you can also support us by rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen, and sharing the podcast with your friends, sharing it on social media. Tell everyone how much you love us, and that really helps.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you. Spread